Sustainability is not top of mind anymore. It does come into play in other ways, efficiency gains and energy conservation and saving money.
Hi, I'm Zena Harris, a founder and entrepreneur working in the entertainment industry for more than 10 years now.
And I'm Mark Rabin, a two-time founder and innovator in the energy tech industry and spent the last decade powering films, events, and festivals with renewable energy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Tie-In. Today, we are here with Barbara Lang, founder and CEO of Kibo 121. As founder and CEO of Kibo 121, she advises organizations worldwide on integrating sustainability into technology strategies with a focus on measurable real-world impact. She is the co-founder of the Media Tech Sustainability Series and the driving force behind the Media Climate Accord, convening industry stakeholders to accelerate climate action. Barbara, welcome to The Time.
Hey. Wow. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here. Looking forward to the conversation.
Very
good.
Now, cool.
Barbara, first, before we jump in, can you describe to us what media tech is?
Yeah. Well, so media doesn't happen without technology. And, you know, we often think about production and the act of collecting the content, right? On set, that's what sort of is what we hear about. And, you know, as consumers kind of can understand. But in order to get from that to a device that you're viewing this content on is all about technology. It doesn't work without technology. So it's not only some of the tech that's on set, especially if you're talking about virtual production and that technology, but mostly we're talking about everything that happens after production all the way to the consumer. So I often look at it in four buckets. There's the production phase, there's the digital factory stage, which is where a lot of manipulation happens. There's the distribution phase, where the content gets sent somewhere over some line to the consumer. And then there's the consumption phase. And all of them have some level of media tech behind them to make it all work.
Interesting. Interesting. Well, you've got quite the career in media tech. So can you help us understand how you got into it and what that journey has been like?
Yeah, I have a very circuitous journey, probably like many people. I wanted to be a doctor. I did. And then I still continued with my studies in chemistry. So I focused in, you know, on a science topic and worked in industry for a bit. And was part of, you know, the end of the 80s, business laying off. And so, and I wasn't really into the job anyway. I ended up in publishing and chemistry publishing in particular. So I was able to use my chemistry, but in a more, a more learned approach, you know, and people were using at this point. Digitization of databases was just happening. And so I was part of that process and could see the systems that people were thinking about when they were transitioning from a print model to a digital model. That led me to academic publishing. And so I left my chemistry behind and I was really working in digital publishing and really helping organizations like the IEEE, believe it or not, work on developing these digital platforms. And that led to being part of an association. And I got recruited to be the executive director of SMPTE. I didn't know what SMPTE was. I had no idea of, I didn't know what SMPTE stood for. I did not know anybody in the industry. I knew nothing.
And this is, just to be clear, this is the Society of Motion Picture and Television Engineers.
Yes, a world-renowned organization. Well, I learned pretty quick what it is. And I stepped into a new domain, a completely new role, never been, you know, sort of the CEO of anything, right? So that was all new for me. But I really enjoyed learning and the camaraderie in the industry. It's a small enough industry. Everybody kind of knows one another. And it is all about media technology and improving the consumer's experience, right? And to be surrounded by these engineers who always want to solve a problem and make things better, it was really a marvelous time. And getting, you know, approaching COVID time now, I was 10 years in, I was thinking, you know, it's probably good for me to move on and also for the organization. We got through COVID and I decided I wanted to step out on my own. And I, like many, didn't quite know exactly what I was going to do, but I focused in on sustainability because I've been, you know, sort of watching it as a consumer, the things that I do personally, but also just sort of thinking about, well, why isn't this industry doing more? Mm-hmm. And so then I launched my business and stepped into it in 2022. So I'm 4.5 years in and I'm still cooking. Although things have evolved quite a bit in the last 4.5 years, which I can tell you about too.
Yeah, well, I mean, love to hear that. Yeah, because I mean, the velocity of technology, in media has, I mean, it increased exponentially. I mean, the fact that nobody has to go into studios anymore, even on a news front, you know, it's interesting, right? Everybody is able, you're able to patch into people's lives wherever they are around the world. I mean, it's incredible. And people are consuming content in a much different way, obviously accelerated by COVID. I mean, maybe tell us a little bit more about what you're seeing and how it's, you know, evolved over the last 5 years.
Yeah. And COVID really accelerated a lot of things. So the good news, right? The good news is when I stepped in, sustainability was a topic that you know, heard about, but it wasn't pervasive. Zena, I'm sure, knows this too in terms of the work that you all have done. And but I, you know, I got sort of you know, luck has a lot to do with lots of journeys, and I got lucky that I knew a lot of people through the SMPTE connections, and I was invited to help lead NAB Sustainability Awards, which they convened in 2023. So I designed the program, I judged it, or got people to judge, I managed the judging, and also helped present, and that was great. 2023 was actually a really great year to come out. In 2022, I was learning, really getting my sea legs around the topic and specifically in the industry. And then in 2023, you know, NAB started and there was lots of activity, I have to say. And even in 2024, but then it sort of slowed down. We can't deny the impact of, you know, our government and the philosophies around that. It has totally changed how people look at things. So from a business perspective, sustainability is not top of mind anymore. It does come into play, however, in other ways, like efficiency gains and energy conservation and saving money. So to my mind, that's okay if you don't want to call it sustainability, but you're doing these things to... at the end of the day, we want you to reduce your energy consumption and your waste, right? Energy consumption and waste. Those are the primary things that I care about. And so if organizations are leveraging the cloud, or they're leveraging remote production, or they're leveraging, you know, the Olympics during COVID, perfect examples where commentators, presenters weren't sent on location. They were on, you know, in studios, hundreds of, you know, thousands of miles back home from the events themselves. So those can all work. But what I'm challenging the industry to do is also to talk about these things, because it's well enough to do them. But let's also, because we want to motivate more of the industry to be better citizens, corporate citizens. So we need to talk about these things. We need to say them out loud. what savings did you see by not sending all these people to blah, 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 or how your remote production is making a difference? And what aspects of your remote production, you know, cloud providers are out there. How do you make sure that the cloud provider you have is truly using renewable energy and is also sustainably minded? So while we can advance some of these technologies, I think we still lack in talking about them and then also forcing the supply chain to also be better actors. So it's a good news. I'm always an optimist, so I don't say it's bad news, but I think it's a lot of work that still needs to be done.
Yeah, it's such a good point, because if we don't, I mean, we talk a lot about storytelling, but if we don't actually tell the story and communicate, even, you know, peer to peer, company to company, or at industry association events or whatever it is about these things, how does it really spread? How can we kind of, you know, compete in a friendly way on some of these, you know, sustainability efforts? So it's such a good point that you bring up. A lot of times I hear it described as green hushing, where people yes. are doing the stuff, but they don't talk about it. And sometimes they don't even realize that they could talk about it. It's just kind of a mundane thing they like do in their day to day. What are some of the ways you are encouraging people to talk about this?
Events, through various events. So you mentioned launching the Media Tech Sustainability Series, which I did with my friend and colleague, Lisa Collins. We started that in, I think, 2023, with the notion of creating a conference. And so our first summit was in, 2023, because this will be the fourth year. And we crafted this website. It's basically a website. The idea behind it was to educate the industry. So everything we do on MTSS is free. We have a ton of resources. We have webinars. We have white papers that we collect from the industry. We haven't written our own white papers, but we're collecting lots of white papers and helping the industry be aware, and everything we do for free because we want it to be accessible. And the summit is a way that we can, you know, concentrate attention on one day. We do it virtually. We record everything, so it's all very easily accessible. We also go on the road and we go to industry events like NAB, IBC. We've also now explored going, we've gone to some of the pro AV industry events like ISE and Infocom to speak. We don't want to create a new event, physical event, because that wouldn't be super sustainable, wouldn't meet our messaging, but we do want to leverage the opportunities at existing events. I also am very active in a lot of other industry groups like Greening of Streaming. I'm on a board member there, and committees within SMPTE and ATSC as well. So I try to put my hands in lots of different pies. And what you find is that there's a lot of the same people in all those different groups, but still enough new people that we hope that we can extend the message and just keep communicating and sharing and really asking people to be inspired to speak so that they aren't green hushing. Mm-hmm. We are, the safe environment, right? We want people to inspire others to do better. So you can only do that if you know about what they're doing and share that experience. And it's not always positive. It doesn't always work great, but the truth is important that we know the good, the bad, and the ugly in these processes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just want to touch on something you mentioned in earlier comment around supply chain, right? I mean, a lot of this still really comes back down to this push-pull, right? The demand has to be there. And then the supply chain to say, well, I still have all this old equipment, or I still have all this, yes. I just invested 5 years ago and all this stuff, and now everything's changing and I have to pay this off. But people are demanding new equipment or new ways. How are you bridging that? And how are you helping to facilitate those conversations? Because that was something that Zena and I have always found. And, it's always like, well, I have all this gear and people are still renting it.
Yeah.
How do you bridge that?
Yeah, I think I think we have to establish some, best practices, and they are best practices. We're not saying that things have to, we can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. We have to work within the systems that we have, right? And over time, we get to perfection, but it's not going to happen, in one go of it. And so I think it's also awareness building telling people that, if you don't need to replace equipment every 2-3 years, maybe you can get another year out of that piece of equipment. The longer that you can work with pieces of equipment, the better. And also then, what are you doing with that old equipment? Are you somehow recycling it? Are you finding a way to have another second life or third life for pieces of equipment? So I think, again, it's about education and awareness building. I also think it offers opportunity for new players to come in, secondhand market kind of player. Just think of your vehicles, right? Your cars. There's a whole business for certified pre-owned vehicles, right? They're very good. They have a few miles on them, but they're still at a price point that works. So why can't we do that in this industry and avoid this constant, upgrading when you don't really need it? Now, I think that in saying that, I think that, content creators, if they're the top of the food chain, have a lot of leverage with their supply chain and to work with the supply chain and to say, look at, you might have all this equipment that you need to, amortize still, but let's see, maybe there's incentives to keep the equipment longer or, new business arrangements that could be made, creative ways to encourage the supply chain to get the most mileage out of, equipment, but also not to sacrifice quality, but to just a lot of these things can last a lot longer than we think. And, I think it's more about that motivation to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Frankly. I just want to just touch, sorry, Zena, one second. I just wanted to touch on that. There's also this movement around the right to repair, right? And those types of movements. I just want to throw that in there because that's going to be probably one of the biggest movements that we're going to see over the next decade in my opinion, we're starting to see it.
I do want to touch on that. Just a personal story, if I could. I also am volunteering in my town for the local sustainability committee, which is just a group of concerned citizens. We don't really have much authority, but we are, a neighbor and I are running our very first repair cafe here in White Plains later this year. And if you've never been to one, I've now been exposed to a few of them. They're amazing. It's where the community comes together and you have a bunch of people who are going to fix the stuff. And you have a bunch of people bringing in, lots of things, and they get repaired. And how marvelous is that? So again, this right to repair is foundational. And I think it, it right now is very much for the consumer, but it should be expanded. The thought process should be that it should work in industry as well, for sure.
Mm-hmm. I love this stuff. I'm a member of our local tool library and they host repair nights too. And I go and I check out tools and I use them on the weekend and then I take them back. I mean, I'm telling you, this is like run through the public library system.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
You can do this anywhere, I think.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes my husband and I go visit libraries when we're traveling. It's a goofy thing, but we love libraries. And so we were in Helsinki. Helsinki has an amazing library where you can check out tools, musical instruments, sewing machines. I mean,
wow.
It's fantastic. And, we should do more of that here, I think.
Exactly. Let's, beat that drum. I'm curious because you interact with all these companies, you're interacting with the supply chain. I'm curious how you notice or maybe tell the difference between a company that is actually doing the work or one that is just managing their reputation.
Ooh, I hate to say there's a little bit of a lot of that.
Yeah.
There are absolutely organizations and media tech sector who are doing the work. And I think the difference is when you start reporting in an ESG report, even if it's a very simple, something, that to me says you're walking the walk. There are, unfortunately, still a few companies out there that, are talking about, I'm in the cloud and I have a soft, I'm a so, I don't make anything tangible. I'm a software company. It's in the cloud. I got a remote workforce. I'm green. Use my services. Not good enough. Not good enough at all. If you were to say that with a, some kind of even simple reporting, then that's a step in the right direction. But just to say that, unfortunately, to me, is greenwashing. And we do have a lot of that. And we do have a lot of people who don't say anything about anything, right? Mm-hmm. That's the biggest pool. We have a bunch of people who say stuff, but don't really have any validation. And then you do have a community of leaders, I would say, who are actively engaged and they do really good reporting, some of whom even go to EcoVadis and CDP and other third-party validation services. We should shine lights on those organizations so they can be inspirations for the rest of the food chain. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's a lot of that, unfortunately, still.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, if people in the supply chain are listening, like, here's an opportunity to, get your act together, find a company that inspires you and, copy the kind of reporting that they're doing.
That's absolutely right. And we, on our MTSS website, we do collect a bunch of ESG reports. Again, they're all publicly available so people can see what's being done. And the other point about this is, the workforce is the younger workforce, the Gen Zers who are coming into the workforce are very keen on climate change initiatives. And if you want to really attract that next generation, it behooves you as an organization to think about, your corporate citizenry and how you can be better for the environment and, all the issues around sustainability, because there are social issues too. But mm-hmm. The workforce really does care. And I think that, is going to be a bigger driver, I think, over the next years or so. Mm-hmm.
100%.
Yeah, absolutely. The IEEE comes up a lot in, our research about you and in your work, and then standards in general, obviously, there's other standard bodies like UL and so on, and CE in Europe and so on for all this equipment. It sometimes though feels like it's a little bit of a cabal, and so how do you bridge working with these standards bodies to make sure that it's the right standard and make sure that, it can be certified and safe and so on, versus it holding back the industry as well.
I don't know. And SMPTE being a standards body also.
Right.
So firstly, standards are by definition should be deployed or employed because, if we're all working in the same way, we reduce waste, right? So that's interoperability. If you only had one, the easiest thing is your charging. If we all had a standard charging cord, we wouldn't have to travel with 13,000 different versions, right? So standards, I am a firm believer in standards in many, many aspects of our lives. The fact of the matter, however, is that business is business and, regional differences and also historical, legacy issues are still there. And, you have to navigate those. But I think as much as we can work towards reducing the number of standards for certain aspects would be an improvement. And, standards bodies are like every other political animal. There are voices that are louder than others. There are, business reasons to participate in standards. It's a very interesting process. I like to believe that most often the value does come out after this due process of back and forth and negotiating and figuring out some of the engineering, so that we end up with things like a Bluetooth that is universally adopted or a Wi-Fi that's universally adopted. But it is a challenge sometimes. Standards is not an easy animal, and you just have to persevere and really, have good people participating in the process, knowledgeable people who have the right vision to get the work done in a timely fashion. But yeah, I wouldn't say that it's a cabal. But it is a political entity in itself, and there's lots of pushing and shoving that has to happen in order to get to the end. Sort of like geopolitical negotiations. It's kind of the same idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. We're seeing it, especially in the battery space. UL has become the dominant body there. There's the 9540. That's around mobile power and, even all types of different battery and BESS systems. So it's, I've been very hyper aware of that. And also, like, fire departments tend to be leading these things, or, certain organizations latch on to a certification. Then the whole industry is being pushed in that direction. So it's been a fascinating thing to see that in the industry that I'm in. That's part of it. Yeah.
No, I think standards, certifications can be also a little wonky, but standards, following the process of standardization, is fascinating. And for the most part, I would say 90% of the time, it works pretty well. Always outliers where things may fall apart for the wrong reasons. But I would say that it's mostly a good process. It's been around for all these years, right? So it should be working. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you've really made it a mission to help organizations talk about their work more, their sustainability more, rally companies who maybe aren't, doing a lot to, inspire them by putting information on your website and whatnot. And you are behind the Media Climate Accord. So this is convening competitors to, work together, agree on something. And I'm curious, how is that going? And how are these companies showing up and talking about their stuff?
So the Media Climate Accord came about really out of a little bit of a frustrating moment last year, sitting in one of my various industry meetings and talking with my colleagues. And I said, gosh darn it, I'm like, why can't we make this move? Why are we not moving? And we need something to anchor on, we need a pledge moment. And so, I went off to my little corner and cogitated and came up with this thing, the Media Climate Accord, which is basically a rallying point to say, can we get the industry towards a net zero target? If we follow the Paris Agreement, we should be net zero by 2050, like everything in the world, which we know is probably not going to happen. But nobody's talking about that within the media industry. Or you have Amazon has its climate pledge, and you have other different, your pact, actually, right? Also, but how can we tie this all together from all those four buckets that I mentioned before, production, digital factory, distribution, and consumption? And so it was born. I went to a number of, usual suspect companies, and I said, hey, what do you think of the idea? They all thought it was great. And the concept is, it is an accountability pledge. You're just going to say that you're going to do something to get towards a net zero target. I put it out there 2040, but maybe it takes 2050. But the idea is that it's your organization's going to measure, report, and communicate. Three things. I don't care what you measure. I don't care how you measure. I don't care how you report. Just that you have a third party reviewing your figures and that you communicate about it. Because the more voices we have talking about this, I believe, you know, it becomes a movement and we can make real change. So that's what it is. And we do have, so we launched it formally at IBC last September. We have about a dozen, maybe 20 different organizations who've signed on. You know, as I've learned, and Zini, you probably know this too, it's sort of like managing yet another thing. So it does need care and feeding. We are one of the targets around this, though, is that I felt like we needed an anchor event to get the industry to kind of experiment on. And you know, could we get a live sporting event and measure it? Just measure it for energy consumption, energy waste and water, actually, for that one event, that one broadcast, and then record that and then say, okay, this is the baseline and let's see how we can improve upon it. I had my eye on a big event and was quickly told maybe we should just start small. So our idea is that we would start with a broadcast in the UK for the English premiership and just measure one broadcast of one match, see what it takes to put broadcast together in all those four buckets, production, digital factory, distribution, consumption, as much as we can, and then publish that and say, okay, this is an industry baseline. Because honestly, we don't have an industry baseline now. So if we don't measure, how can we improve, right? Mm-hmm. And so the idea is, could we create this sort of template and then invite broadcasters or content creators, I don't know what to call them anymore, use that template and make improvements and talk about it again and public, and suddenly you have this movement and it becomes a thing. So that's my dream. And we're getting closer because we have made, you know, some ideas about next steps. And so I'm hopeful that, you know, by the end of the summer, we might have a plan that we can actually articulate and actually move on with. So yeah. The more the merrier. Anybody's interested, reach out and we're happy to collect feedback, inputs, insights, all that stuff.
Fantastic. What a great, like, I mean, it's just, I think all of this, the sustainability movement is, you know, because people took initiative to do a thing. So, you know, kudos for doing that. And trying to rally people and companies and, you know, like just keep the momentum. Just as we're wrapping out here, first of all, is there anything we missed that you wanted to talk about before we kind of wrap out?
You might get to this, but I'll just say, that I am actually quite optimistic for the future. You know, 20, as I mentioned, 23, 24 were good years, 25 sort of saw things fade, and 26 has been, you know, sort of, but I see what's happening outside of our industry. And I see that, you know, with the world in the state that it is, you know, what's happening in the Middle East, the push to renewables is accelerating around the world. May not be so much here in the United States, but it is happening here too, by the way. And in the most unusual places, you would think, you know, Texas is one of the biggest renewable energy states in this country,
yep.
Right? And so I'm encouraged by that. I think industry and business, I think that's where you have to look for where the future is going. Not so much the politics. The politics are going to change, even though, you know, it may take a while. The future is towards renewable energy. And so I am really pretty optimistic about that. What challenges me is how to bring that optimism into this industry. And I'm not giving up, but it could be better. But as long as there is this light at the end of the tunnel in terms of sort of the outside world, I feel like we have a chance. So that's
you're
what
here.
I would say.
I agree. And then one fun thing that we read, in prepping for this. The name of your company, Kibo 121, we researched that you summited Kilimanjaro.
Yes.
Tell us about that. And then you named your company after the
people. So, thanks for asking that question. Yes, I, well, for my 40th birthday, I had this dream to climb Kilimanjaro. I don't know why. I'm not a big hiker, but, you know, I don't know. You dream. And my boyfriend at the time, my husband now, said, if you keep talking about it, you better get your act together and start planning it and doing it. And so he went with me and we did it. And I call it Kibo, but I've told Kibo is probably the proper pronunciation, but somehow I keep saying Kibo. But it is the active crater on top of Kilimanjaro. And we had the pleasure, we summited on January 21st, so 121, January 21st. And we had the pleasure of sleeping the night, spending the night with our crew in the crater itself on the 21st. And then we took us 6 days to go up and 2 days to come down. It was an amazing experience. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. So, how cool.
Yeah. And so when I stepped out on my own, I thought, yeah, it kind of fits together. And I like it.
So. Yeah. Very good. Very good. Okay. Well, tell us where we can find you online.
Okay. So honestly, my best is LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn pretty actively. So if you search for me on LinkedIn, that's where you can find me. I do have a website at www.kibo121.io. And of course, the MTSS Media Tech Sustainability Series, mtssseries.org, is another place where you'll find me. But LinkedIn tends to be my my sort of go-to social platform. I'm not Instagramming or Facebooking, unfortunately. I'm too old for that, I think.
No worries. Well, very cool, Barbara. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for having me and for doing what you do in keeping this podcast, the momentum around it. We need all these accelerants, and this is a great opportunity to continue that conversation. So thanks for having me.
Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. We'd love for you to like, subscribe, and share. We do this because we love doing it. We believe in what we're doing, and we believe in the amazing guests that we have. So please share this with a friend and a colleague and spread the word.
Our designer is Aaliyah Kane. Music is by Peter Chapman. Social media is by Sharon Ewan. Our editor and producer is Rachel Werbel.